call to order the House Committee on Human Services on today, April 22nd, 2009. Some of you may be here for some bills that we're not going to be able to hear today. We'll be carrying over, so I'll announce them in the beginning so you don't have to stay to listen to this wonderful committee. HGR 45, 3065, 2051, 2134, 2205, 2726. And 2990. For some of you who might have come for those bills, if we don't have fiscals, we generally have to hold them over until we do have a fiscal statement. Fiscal statement. Pardon?
Okay. It's HJR 45.
Yes. House Bill 3065. The rest should be closer to the end on your agenda.
Yeah, okay.
2051, 2134, 2205, 2726, and 2990.
Okay, there we
got
go.
Got them? Okay.
Cool. Can we just
so
go home,
I am
then?
So tired of carrying this pile of bills with me every day. Okay, we will open up a hearing, a work session on House Bill 3471. Keeley.
This bill requires the Department of Human Services enter into the necessary agreements to carry out the requirements of the Convention on the Protection of Children and Cooperation in respect of intercountry adoption. It requires that the rules adopted by DHS include minimum requirements for placement, supervision, and monitoring of a child subject to an outgoing convention adoption in Oregon. The committee amendment, which is recommended, the -1 amendment, requires that DHS work with the United States Department of State to implement convention requirements for convention adoptions and develop minimum requirements for placement and supervision of children who are subject of an outgoing adoption.
Thank you, Keeley. So,
okay, well, Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3471 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review.
Thank you. Do we need to adopt the dash amendment before we...
No, we need to suspend rules
okay.
first.
Okay. All right. So Representative Olson moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3471 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review. This motion is undebatable. Those of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3471 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review will say aye, and those opposed, no. Zach, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Van Orman.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Pruitt.
Aye.
Representative Dimbro.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Excused.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. Motion carries and rules have been suspended.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3471 dated April 14, 2009.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3471 dated April 14, 2009. Any discussion? Okay. And if not, the amendment is adopted.
And Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 3471 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 3471 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? You guys are easy. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Cowan.
Excuse.
Representative
Dimbro. Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative
Huffman. Aye.
Representative
Maurer. Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. The majority of votes has been acquired. This bill passes. House Bill 3471 passes. And so now it goes to Ways and Means, right?
I think on this one it can probably just go to the floor.
Okay, and I will carry this bill. Thank you, colleagues. Okay, so now we will move on to we're okay with these two, right?
Pick a bill.
Pick a bill, any bill.
If you want to let Mr. O'Leary come and go, we should go to 3353.
Thank you. So we'll open up a, what do we say? A work session on House Bill 33 what?
53. This bill establishes a alcohol and drug treatment policy commission in the Department of Justice, abolishes the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, and transfers the duties, powers, and funds of the council to the commission. The Dash 1 amendment expands the commission from 15 to 16 members, designates reporting dates, including the requirement for a report detailing a specific plan for funding and delivering services across all human services and public safety agencies. The Dash 2 amendment is a minor language change that creates consistent language from the former council's responsibility to the commission's responsibility.
Mr. O'Leary, would you want to come and tell us about this?
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Joe O'Leary, Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Kulongoski. It's a pleasure to be here before you this morning on House Bill 3353. You may remember from the public hearing several weeks ago, this bill comes to you as a result of a collaborative effort over the last several months between Attorney General John Boger, Governor Kulongoski, specifically myself and Claudia Black of the Governor's Staff, Max Williams, the Director of the Department of Corrections, Bruce Goldberg, the Director of the Department of Human Services, and the Governor's Alcohol and Drug Policy Council, which is chaired by Stephanie Soros Pump, who is seated here in the gallery. The Dash 1 amendment is a comprehensive amendment that tweaks some of the issues that came out in the first draft of the bill. Notably, one significant change is that the bill had been drafted, I think accidentally drafted, in a way that would suggest that the commission would be staffed by the Department of Justice. The Dash 1 corrects that and indicates that the commission would be staffed by the Department of Human Services. And that the Department of Human Services may contract out staffing to an appropriate entity with expertise in drug and alcohol prevention and treatment issues. There is also a Dash 2 amendment that is very minor in words, but significant in that it includes prenatal I just actually looked it up where this goes,
going.
But within the scope of the what the commission is to do. In a couple parts of the bill here, it's on page 6 and 7 of the Dash 1 amendment. The commission is to plan and advocate for research-based initiatives for children who are 18 years or younger or prenatal, and their families is where that goes. The other thing I want to let you know that has, besides the amendments itself, that has developed since the last time you heard this bill, is that the governor has made a decision to fund this commission through the federal Justice Assistance Burn Grant stimulus, which I should say a portion of that stimulus, which is coming to the state of Oregon through the United States Department of Justice Bureau of Justice Assistance. The total amount coming to Oregon is about $22 million through a formula grant that is known as the Byrne-JAG formula. It is the grant, that portion, that $22 million, is just the stimulus amount that's included in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, ARRA, that was passed earlier this year. And what we've been told, although I know you don't have a completed fiscal impact from LFO, what we had been told much earlier from the Department of Human Services when we were talking about funding this commission, and we asked DHS to give us a ballpark, the ballpark was in the neighborhood of $600,000. So the governor has made the decision to use $600,000 of the state portion of the Byrne-JAG to direct to fund this commission. That is a an application that has been made to the U.S. Department of Justice by the state administering agency, which is the Oregon State Police, in cooperation with the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, who has been given authority to oversee and administer the Byrne Grant. And that was approved actually last week, last Friday, by the full Ways and Means Committee. Thanks for letting me put all that on the record. And I'm happy to ask any questions, answer any questions that you may have.
You can ask them too, Joe. Any questions? Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Joe, you opened up a line of questioning here. It's 600,000 out of 22 million? 20 million?
22. Madam Chair, Representative Maurer.
Follow up.
This is a one-time grant. I mean, the stimulus is all one-time money. And you may not know the answer to this, but when we go forward into the, not, you know, the 09-11, but to the 11-13 biennium, this is all going to be part of our roll-up essential budget level, because there's no funding. I mean, the funding disappears in 2 years. I mean, can you kind of help me on how that's going to look the next time we're sitting in this committee 2 years from now?
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, I think I can answer that question. I think, if I may, I think your question is, it looks like you're only putting grant money that's not going to be continued, that's a one-time federal stimulus grant, into a commission that may be ongoing. How are we going to pay for it into the future? And my response, if I'm understanding
exactly
your question right, my response to that is that the scope of this commission is limited and terminal. The scope of this commission is, over the next 4 years, to create a roadmap to present to the governor and the legislature for the improvement of how the state delivers drug and alcohol prevention and treatment services across human services and public safety sectors. And the $600,000, to my mind, and we've had conversations between all of the principals putting this together, $600,000 ought to get us there for the 4 years.
4 years?
Yes.
Okay.
But you are correct that the federal stimulus is a, as far as we know now, although I've heard that some economists are encouraging the federal government to sustain and continue and blah, 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 and that's all great, but who knows? That's a crystal ball. But I do want to mention this one other thing. We the states, receive Byrne grant money separate from the federal stimulus. The federal stimulus, if you will, is a bonus payment, a one-time, as far as we know now, bonus payment. But there still is an underlying continuing annual appropriation to the states of Byrne JAG money. It's not anywhere close to $22 million. It's actually historically been as high as about $10 million and more recently as low as about $2 million. So we will continue to receive those annual grants that will be subject to the governor's discretion, subject to budget authority by the legislature.
Any further questions? Anyone?
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Joe.
So, if you want to move this today, we'll need to suspend the rules for that.
Okay.
This as well.
Right.
Oh, I mixed them. Sorry.
Is there any further questions? Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of voting without fiscal on House Bill 3353.
Doesn't it go to Ways and Means?
Yes, ma'am, we'll do that in the... But we still have to suspend the rules to vote because we don't have a fiscal statement.
Oh, I
and
see.
Then
okay,
it goes
without the fiscal statement.
Right.
Okay, I'm a little confused then because I thought that this was just voted on supporting this out of full Ways and Means here.
It could.
Go ahead. I think it has to go to Ways and Means.
It couldn't. I mean, yeah. They couldn't vote on this because they don't have the...
Okay, got you.
But and just yes. Point of procedure, I don't think we have to take a roll call to suspend the rules.
It has to be... No, we don't have to take a roll call, but it everybody has to agree to
right.
Do that.
Right, there's no objection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, thank you. So, Representative Olson moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of voting on 3353 without the fiscal. Those in favor of suspending the rules for this purpose will vote aye and opposed... Vote no. So and I'll just ask, any objection to that? Seeing none, we will suspend the rules now.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3353, dated April 9th, 2009, and the Dash 2 amendments, dated April 13th, 2009.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment and the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3353, respectively, dated April 9th and April 13th. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
And Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3353 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 3353 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Van
Orden. Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Excuse.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Zimbra.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Chair
Somay. Aye. Having received the required majority, House Bill, what is it, 3353, passes, and we'll go to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Joe, for coming, and Mr. Unger also. Thank you. And I want to commend our longtime member of the Commission on Alcohol and Drug Abuse. So thank you very much. And also Representative Cowan, right? Weren't you on that?
Yes.
So thank you all for both for your work on that committee, commission, whatever it was, council? What was it?
Council.
Yes.
I had to run through the...
Right. All to go through the seas. Yeah, so. Thank you. I know you've just put many hours and many days in this and probably weeks and months and years. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Certainly, Stephanie, far more than I has invested a great deal of her life into this, and I appreciate the fact that she's come regularly for about four meetings waiting for us to be able to act on this bill.
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's see.
I'll just get it later.
I was just told by the Empress of the Universe that I cannot hold H.J.R. 45. I cannot refer it. Let's see. If I want to have a public hearing, so I rescind the H.J.R. 45. How can I say that? That it will
hold over.
Hold that the holdover. That I will. Because I have to have a 72-hour notice. H.J.R. 45 will be. Have a public hearing on Monday. What's the date on Monday?
The 27th.
27th. Thank you. Okay. And when I say Empress of the Universe, I say it with the most respect.
And a work session or just public hearing?
Public hearing.
Okay.
Okay. Where do we go now?
2989, if you'd like.
No, let's do this.
Okay.
Okay, we will open up the first public hearing on House Bill 2136. prohibits the distribution of tobacco products from vending machines. It corrects or eliminates vending machine language and statute. Repeals statutes pertaining to vending machine regulation. We had a hearing on this in January. Okay. So we will hear from Chris. Mel Cohn. Is Mel here?
He's been in and out of another hearing. I will check on
okay.
him.
Christina Swartz and Mel Cohn, if and when he comes in. Mary Gail Wood. Good morning. Mel, I'm going to let you go first. Thank you all for coming today.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the acting director of the Public Health Division at the Department of Human Services. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak today. I'm going to speak in favor of this. This bill was actually introduced on our behalf by the governor. Tobacco use, as I know this committee knows, is a very serious problem. 22% of all deaths in Oregon are attributable to tobacco, with huge implications in terms of cost for our state. We know that preventing kids from starting to smoke early is key to addressing this issue. And about 10% of eighth graders in Oregon reported smoking in the last 30 days. So this is a problem that, despite the successes we've had in tobacco control, continues to plague us. About 7% of the Oregon 8th graders who told us that they have smoked reported purchasing cigarettes from vending machines, and that's what this bill aims to fix. Every day, about 48 kids in Oregon start. The Centers for Disease Control and the Institute of Medicine indicate that addressing this problem of preventing kids from starting to smoke is a critical deterrent to tobacco use. I also think another important aspect of this bill is that it ensures consistency among Oregon statutes that are designed to limit youth access to tobacco. There are a number of other provisions on the books that require vendor assistance for tobacco sales in a retail store, but vending machines that might be in places such as hotel lobbies where children or youth can have access, there's nobody there to check ID. Because of this, we strongly support the passage of this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that might come up.
Thank you, Dr. Cohn. Any questions of this witness? Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair. You presented this before, and we talked about it to keep children from getting access to cigarettes, and I can't think of a better thing to do than what you're trying to do there. We had some discussion about age-restricted areas, bars and taverns specifically, and what's the problem with having an exclusion or allowing vending machines in bars?
Representative Tomei, Representative Freeman, if children truly do not have access to those areas and it can be policed, I suppose it would take care of the issues with respect to access to children. I would say, though, that in general, we are not trying to encourage tobacco use in any way in this state, and any way that makes it easier for people to get tobacco would not be something that we would support. But in terms of the specific issues around children, you are correct that if it was in a bar where children were not allowed, that, you know, that would not be a relevant issue.
Any further questions? Representative Van Orman.
But that would mean that the bar could sell cigarettes. It just wouldn't be able to sell them out of a vending machine.
Representative Tomei, Representative Van Orman, I believe that's true. I mean, obviously it would depend on the specifics of how the bill was amended, but conceivably it could be written in that way. Yes.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning. For the record, I am Mary Gail Wood with Wasco Sherman Public Health Department. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, I am Mary Gail Wood, Prevention and Education Coordinator for Wasco Sherman Public Health Department. I support the passage of House Bill 2136, which prohibits the sale of tobacco products through vending machines. 7% of Oregon 8th graders who smoke report purchasing cigarettes from vending machines. 48 children smoke their first cigarette every day in Oregon, and 20 of those children will still be smoking a year later. 90% of current adult smokers started smoking before they turned 18 years old. Current law allows children and youth access to tobacco vending machines, most notably in hotel lobbies. Because purchases from tobacco vending machines do not require age verification, vending machines offer youth easy access to tobacco products. I recently realized the importance of this issue while staying at the Hilton in downtown Portland. There was a tobacco vending machine located in the hotel lobby away from the view of front desk staff. Anyone, including a youth, could access tobacco from this machine in anonymity. Youth access to vending machines is a concern throughout Oregon. I would like to draw your attention to the written testimony provided to you by Ms. Bethann Beamer at Jefferson County, which also describes these concerns. If we as a state do not approve House Bill 2136, youth will continue to have easy access to cigarettes and other tobacco products, which increases their likelihood of smoking. We all deserve freedom of choice. An addiction to tobacco products is not freedom of choice. Chair Tomei and honorable committee members, I encourage you to pass this important piece of legislation to protect youth in Oregon from the deadly effects of tobacco.
Thank you. Any questions of this witness? Representative Maurer.
Yep. Thanks, Madam Chair. Would you have objection if this bill permitted vending machines in areas where only people 21 and over could have access to?
Chair Tomei and Representative Maurer, I would state similar to Dr. Cohn that as long as that's restricted, my concern is that there are many bars that allow youth under 18.
And I'm not, I'm saying, I understand that there's the minors allowed issue, but
sure.
21 only.
Sure.
You know.
I personally do not have an issue on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, good morning and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak. My name is Christina Swartz and I am the outreach coordinator for the Tobacco Free Coalition of Oregon. And I'm here today representing all the members of the coalition to voice their strong support for HB 2136, which prohibits the sale of tobacco products in vending machines. We know that in 2005, as mentioned previously, 7% of 8th graders who smoke reported purchasing cigarettes from vending machines. 90% of current adult smokers started smoking before they were 18. There's a loophole in current law that allows easy access to very addictive products. The passage of HB 2136 will create one more barrier for underage youth to access these products. By eliminating tobacco vending machines, we're ensuring that anywhere tobacco products are sold, a person is there to determine the age of the person buying and to deny the sale when appropriate. Thank you again for allowing me to speak. And again, I urge you to support HB 2136.
Thank you very much. Any further questions of anyone on this panel? Thank you very much for coming to testify today. So we also have Lee, and I'm sure, Lee, I cannot pronounce your last name, sorry.
Frendel.
And Roger Martin. And then Margie, whose last name I forgot.
Huffman.
Didn't it? I don't
know. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the lobbyist for the Oregon Amusement and Music Operators Association. Lee Prantl is with me. Lee is a Salem operator and longtime member of the organization. We are not opposed to the bill. We support it. I have eight children, eight daughters and sons-in-law, and 17 grandchildren. None of them smoke, and I don't want any of them to start smoking. I can't remember when I last smoked. But we're in kind of a little interesting conflict here. In other committees of this legislature, the committees are considering tobacco taxes to fund some vital services. In my case, the transportation of the elderly and handicapped. we are trying to discourage smoking, but we are still taxing it as a source of revenue for very needed services. I would appreciate it if you would consider the one thing we want to talk about, which is the exemption for bars or places that are off-limit to anybody but 21-year-olds. Madam Chair, I realize, and we've talked about this, and you've pointed out that when we were younger, we were able to walk through the door of the kind of lounges that existed then and access a machine. I would suggest to you, and we've done a little research, there are very few of those opportunities anymore for people to go in. The places that sell them are cut off in what we're talking about, strictly off-limits for OLCC-licensed premises where minors, certainly not eighth graders, are ever accessing. And we're going to have people in the state that want to buy cigarettes, and I think they ought to be able to buy them in places like that, which are off-limits for children. I'd like Lee to just give you a little practical example, since he has machines in places like that in Salem.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Lee Prandtl. I'm Vice President with the Amusement Operators. I operate a couple hundred bars or in a couple hundred bars in the up and down the Willamette Valley. The main thing about the machine of cigarette sales, it's far safer than having behind the counter.
Safer?
It is safer because if a place were broken into, for example, now I'm talking about a bar, if the cigarettes are just laying on the back bar or they're in the cupboard underneath, those people would take those cigarettes, obviously, in their machine. They can't get to them. And I do believe it's, as far as minors, it's far safer to have them in a machine in an age-restricted area like the bars that we're talking about. So,
Thank you. Any question of either of these witnesses? Susan.
Well,
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. How many vending machines are we talking about in Oregon?
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, maybe 100. I'm just guessing. I really am. I have about 20.
Okay.
But there aren't a bunch of them. There really aren't.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. Describe to me, you did a little bit on the safety of people breaking in, but from a retailer's perspective, what's the advantage or disadvantage of having a vending machine versus just selling cigarettes from behind the counter?
Madam Chair and Representative Freeman, it's most of the time the bars just don't want to mess with it, to be real truthful, because there's a chance of theft and that kind of thing. So, you know, cigarettes are expensive. They could have $500-$600, $1,000 worth of cigarettes, and they're hard to control as far as inventory and that kind of thing. So, consequently, they most often or quite often will want a machine where they don't have a thing to do with it. If people want to use it, fine. If they don't, then it's inventory control, quite frankly.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you very much. Margie?
Hello. For the record, my name is Margie Hoffman, and I'm here representing both the American Lung Association of Oregon and the Tobacco Free Coalition of Oregon, which includes the Oregon Nurses Association and Northwest Public Health Foundation, as well as Heart, Lung, and Cancer. I just want to speak to a couple of points. One, the proposed amendment to allow for the sale of cigarettes from vending machines in bars. I grew up in a small town in Colorado, and when I was 15 years old, the way I bought my first pack of cigarettes was walking into a bar where my high school math teacher was the moonlight bartender. I walked right by her, right by the other bartender to the back of the bar, bought my cigarettes from the vending machine, and walked out. I was not carded. Nor did anybody, especially this woman who knew me, try to stop me or question the fact that I was 15 years old in a bar that's supposed to only serve 21 and up. So on behalf of the Tobacco Free Coalition of Oregon, we absolutely do not support any proposed amendment that would limit the sale of cigarettes from vending machines in places that only serve 21 and up for that reason, that we really believe that you have to have a person who can check a person's ID, sell cigarettes. That is the only way that we can absolutely ensure that only 18 and up people buy cigarettes. One. Number two, I just want to speak to the fact that it may be easier to sell cigarettes from a vending machine than it would be behind the bar. We only have, as you stated, we have less than 100 vending machines in the state of Oregon. Most of them are concentrated in hotel lobbies, which serve everybody. We have far more than 100 bars in the state of Oregon. We probably have far more than 100 bars in the city of Portland, most of whom sell cigarettes from behind the counter where they can check ID. So I just would like to testify in support of the bill as written. It is a good bill. It closes a loophole, and it will help us prevent children from being able to buy cigarettes before they are legally able to do so at the age of 18. Thank you very much for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Margie. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do the people who, do you get anything out of the sale of the cigarettes from the machine?
Madam Chair and Representative Boone, you mean a revenue
right,
profit?
Like
yes, we do. Do we get anything?
Follow up? Like a... How much do you get from the
You know, typically a couple dollars, but we may give 50 cents or 75 cents or a dollar to the location. Yeah, even believe me, the sales are, there aren't a lot of sales anymore, to be real truthful, but yeah, we do. There's some profit there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else? Thank you all for coming to testify today. Thank you very much. Okay, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill? All right.
Madam Chair, you ready for a motion?
I am.
Oh, are we in? I thought we were in a public hearing.
Oh, we are, actually. That's correct. We need to close the public hearing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll close the hearing on House Bill 2136 and open up a work session.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2136 dated February 20th, 2009. And for those that don't have it,
it only permits sale of or use
of vending machine inside a bar, tavern, or cocktail lounge posted as off-limits to minors under rules adopted by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
Representative Maurer moves the -1 amendment to House Bill 2136. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, it's when this bill first came up, I was very supportive of the concept and knowing or believing that there aren't very many of these vending machines, and I you know, generally am opposed to smoking, but I also believe that it's an issue of free will, and you know, we're to a point we might as well just say we might as well outlaw cigarettes, period, because we're on the verge of outlawing them anyway, and quite frankly, I think that would not be a good thing because of the whole issue of the black market. People are going to get them, and if this is a way for a business to operate for whatever purpose, inventory control is probably a pretty darn good reason to have a vending machine as opposed to selling them behind the counter, then I would support it. Because you are not going to stop these bars from selling cigarettes unless we just flat out outlaw. So I think this is a reasonable compromise to the bill and would support it, and actually won't support the bill unless this amendment is in it.
Thank you, Representative Maurer. Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will support this amendment, but I am still concerned about the presence of the vending machine in a tavern. You know, I think just, you know, if you just consider this sort of the real world situation where you have people who are intoxicated, lightly intoxicated perhaps, but still intoxicated, who are going to be prone to buy cigarettes from a vending machine where they might not buy them actually from a person behind a counter. And it kind of leads them to behavior that they're later going to regret and set them up for addiction or encourage an addiction when they a habit that they may be trying to quit in other situations. Having said that, though, this does seem like, you know, a reasonable way to go at this point. But... you know, I think it's just going to be a matter of time before we decide they should not even be in bars and taverns.
My concern has been, and I think I mentioned it the first time we had a hearing here, was that when I was 15 years old, I easily went into bars and taverns and lounges. And Margie, who testified, is tall and a very lovely-looking woman. I was short and skinny, and I did not look anywhere close to being 21, much less 18. And I just slipped in, and all of my friends did. We just went in, and I think that's what we're still hearing from young people. That's because they're not carded. When they order a drink, that's when their ID is looked at. So I think this is just one more. If people in a bar choose to buy their cigarettes, they can get it from behind the bar. They can go to a grocery store anywhere that they want it. But if a kid goes to the grocery store or 7-Eleven or whatever, then they will be carded. Their ID will be looked at. This is just one more way. And to me, if adults, I couldn't agree more. If adults choose to smoke, it's their business. I don't like it either. I don't like being around it. But if they choose, that's their choice, and let them do it. But what I think we're trying to do is to stop children from smoking. And if this makes it accessible for kids, it's not only accessible, it's exciting. It was very exciting to go into these forbidden places, and nobody kicked me out. They would have kicked me out if I tried or a drink, but they
don't
didn't.
Encourage them, Madam Chair.
It is encouraging. Once they do it, it is such a thrill that they're likely to go back again. So I'm going to be opposed to this amendment. And let's see, we had Representative Hubbard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think you and I are old enough that, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was easier to get into bars a couple of years ago when we were younger.
A couple of years.
Because we probably all have our in the bar at 12 years old story, except for Representative Maurer, of course. I support the amendment because I think we're addressing the wrong problem. The problem is kids getting into bars, and that's what we need to focus on stopping. And if it's against the law, if we enforce the law and we don't allow the kids in the bar, then the vending machine's not going to be a problem. So I think we're focused on the wrong problem.
But the bartender is not going to stop the kids from coming in. They're going to stop them if they try to order a drink, not when they walk in.
Well, they should be stopping them from walking in.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. I think this amendment makes a good bill great. And I like the idea of trying to keep children away from tobacco products. I have young children, and I can't imagine anything more important that we should be doing. The reason I like the amendment is it does allow these businesses that have been operating, making a living doing this, to continue to operate. I can't imagine us looking at doing anything that would somehow limit people's ability to make a living and to limit jobs. So that's sort of the angle I'm taking on. I mean, these folks have been running these vending machine companies, and they make their living that way. And if we pass this without the amendment, we effectively will put that portion of their business out of business, and I can't support that. As far as the bartender checking ID or allowing, in one of the examples we heard today, clearly the bartender knew the person was underage, and I would argue possibly if she was selling cigarettes from behind the bar, would have sold her cigarettes. She didn't do anything to stop her from the vending machine, so I'm not sure that argument works all that well. People that are not 21 should not be in bars, and that is the law. And I don't know why we need to pass multiple laws to take care of the same problem. So,
thank you, Representative. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am not going to support this amendment because it seems to me like the amount of the cost to our health care problems that smoking causes is very large compared to a small amount. And I know when I hear there's 100 machines statewide, it's not like 100 machines in Salem, 100 in Portland, 100 around. Not that for me that wouldn't matter because fortunately I didn't smoke. I did smoke on dares and got very sick. but I got my excitement through skiing fast and never turning. So we have different degrees of excitement. But I think that in all seriousness that the cost that is incurred on our healthcare system by all of us in some manner is easily explained away by the small piece that this takes care of. And if there is not, as Mr. Ms. Lee, I can't remember his last name, said, not a, a huge amount of income realized by the sale of these cigarettes from this, these few machines. And I respect your comments about business, et cetera, but I don't think it's, in this case, I think that the benefits outweigh the costs in that sense. So I'm not going to support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative. Okay, any further discussion? All right. Let's see. We need to move on the amendment. So Representative Maurer moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2136. Zach, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Cowan.
No.
Representative Dimbro.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Representative Van Orman.
No.
Vice Chair Boone.
No.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
No. Having received the required majority, Dash 1 amendment is attached to House Bill 2136. Representative Boone.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2336 as amended to the 2136 to the as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative moves House Bill 2136 to, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, yes. Thanks for this little conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you for it, too. Zach, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Van Orman.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Dimbro.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. Having passed the required majority, House Bill 2136 is amended, passes, and so then we assign a period. Representative Boone, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
If you don't, I can assign it to somebody else. That's okay.
If somebody else wants to, then.
Sure.
Representative Riley.
Riley?
Sure,
okay, great. Representative Maurer will carry this. Bill to the floor. Thank you. Okay, so now we will hear House Bill 2358. Keeley. No, we'll have the first public hearing and a work session on House Bill 2358.
This bill, in the public interest of the health and well-being of Oregonians, prohibits the distribution of free samples of non-cigarette tobacco products. It defines non-cigarette tobacco product as any product containing tobacco and intended for human consumption, except those items defined by statute as cigarettes. It imposes a civil penalty for violation and designates the method and agency to impose the penalty.
Thank you. So we will hear from Dr. Cohn still here? Great. Dr. Cohn, Raquel Gornateski, is it anywhere close? And Randy Harris. Does Charles run over here? Good morning. Thank you for coming today. Go ahead.
Good morning once again, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn, Acting Director of the Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to testify on this bill. I'm going to testify in strong support of this bill because I believe that the distribution of free tobacco products is a deliberate method for recruiting new and younger tobacco users who then become addicted to tobacco for life. In 2005, tobacco companies spent over $250 million nationwide promoting these smokeless products, and I think that's as much evidence as you could possibly ask for that
this method of recruiting customers works. We also have strong evidence that sampling bans work.
Don't you think so?
In 2004, the city of Pendleton passed an ordinance banning the free distribution of tobacco products, and this covered the Pendleton Roundup, where free samples had previously been handed out. And I think that ban has been very, very effective, and there's no longer this distribution of free tobacco products there. So the real or another important issue with respect to the distribution of free samples is that often they make their way into children's hands. And I will tell you that the way these items are designed is precisely with that purpose in mind. And I brought a few examples with me, which I'd be happy to pass around to you. So, first, this was a free box. This is Snus, which is a little packet of chewing tobacco that's designed to be, if you will, a little less gross than spitting out a big goober of chewed on tobacco somewhere.
I'm offended.
Representative Tomei, Representative Olson, no intent to offend you. But this packet, the tobacco stays within this packet so that it can then be spit out. And this very, very attractively designed product with three cans, not one, but three, and you can see the look. I mean, this is high design, clearly designed to appeal particularly to young people. This is another example of the design. This is designed to look like a cell phone. And I don't have to tell you how our kids and teens love cell phones. So this, again, the design has a particular purpose in mind. And then there are all kinds of ways that the tobacco industry... distributes free coupons. These are free coupons for Snus, the product that I'm passing around. And one of the ways that this kind of marketing is used is actually to build mailing lists for the tobacco companies. So when you send this in or when they give you a coupon, of course, they can only distribute they will ask you for your driver's license so that they can look at your age and so forth. And this has been documented by several tobacco advocates as a way that their names have been put on these mailing lists, generating significant amount of direct advertising to folks. So this, again, is another somewhat insidious way. And I'll mention, I happened to open Willamette Week this week and found this insert in Willamette Week. This is for a dissolvable tobacco product. Buy any tobacco product and get a free pack of Camel dissolvables as well. Now, these products, particularly the dissolvables, are designed to help people maintain their tobacco addiction and really undercut whatever pressure folks might feel to quit smoking that would otherwise have an effect. So, again, this is not a good thing from the standpoint of tobacco control. I have some more in my bag of tricks here if anyone would like to see, but, you know, just more examples of the kind of marketing that goes on. Again, you'll see a similar look. This is actually cigarettes themselves, but again, Camel Exotic Blends, a dark mint. Again, marketed deliberately towards children and that kind of market. Here's one that's marketed specifically for women in pink, light, and luscious. Again, getting young women addicted to this product. There was, for a long time, women lagged behind men in terms of tobacco use, but unfortunately that is really no longer the case, and it's because of some of this direct advertising to women that we've gotten where we've gotten.
Here's another one. Camel Kauai Colada, Hawaiian hints of pineapple and coconut. Again, deliberately oriented towards the youth market. Now, in rural Oregon, where smokeless tobacco is heavily marketed to young men, one in three 11th grade boys are regular users. We know that young men living in these areas are three times more likely to use smokeless tobacco than urban men, and it's a serious problem for them. It contains 28 cancer-causing agents linked to cancer of the mouth, throat, and stomach. In 2005, there were almost 400 deaths in Oregon from mouth and throat cancer, and 193 from stomach cancer. By preventing kids from getting started on using smokeless, we can prevent many of these deaths. One other point I want to make, and this is a distinction, unfortunately, that we have in Oregon. Because Washington State has a sampling ban, Portland in particular, but all of Oregon in general, has become the place that the industry is marketing these products. And I think this is not a distinction that Oregon ought to be proud about and something that we can fix with this bill. So without this legislation, free samples of all of these non-cigarette tobacco products will continue to be available in Oregon, increasing the number of youth who become users. I'll be happy to answer any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Any questions? Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. Does this bill ban the coupons, too? Because we had some talk about that in the last committee meeting.
Representative Tomei, Representative Freeman, I believe that it does. Let me just double-check with staff here. Yes, when we talked with Mr. Cheek about that over the summer, he did feel that it did close that loophole as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Freeman. I mean.
The other Freeman?
The other Freeman.
Has there been a study done? What proof do we have that the kids that are using got started using through free samples?
Representative Tomei, Representative Huffman, we have lots of anecdotal information about how these products have gotten into kids' hands, kids who have gotten free samples that have been distributed. I'm not aware that we have a specific study that has specifically pointed out that specific issue, but we also have a lot of data showing that kids who get started using tobacco earlier get hooked, and it's much, much harder for them to quit, and that's tobacco of any type.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Follow up.
Doctor, my concern is that that is specifically what we're talking about. And you mentioned you don't have anything specific, but the bill is specific to the free samples. And my concern is when we're talking about kids getting hooked and we're suggesting that they're getting hooked with free samples, I mean, I'm at the point where I think we should just write a priority bill here and just outlaw all tobacco because we're trying to.
And Representative, that's certainly available to you. I promise a hearing.
And Representative Greenlick and I can join together and probably get her. One last question. The 310 snooze, was that a free sample given out at a rodeo or something?
Representative Tomei, Representative Huffman, yes, it was a free sample. One other line of evidence that I think points to why the free sample issue is particularly relevant for kids, and that is that we know when we raise the price of tobacco products, kids are particularly sensitive to that, and their use drops even more than adults' use does when we raise the price. And that stands to reason. Kids generally have less disposable income, and so if something costs more, they're less likely to use it. So if something is completely free, the likelihood that they're going to use it is that much greater.
Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We talk about cost savings, and there are now three studies out that talk about costs and smoking that are contradictory to the standard. You know, the assumption is that you smoke and it costs more. And the first one, of course, is an old study in 97 from the New England Journal of Medicine. And I'll read the conclusion is, if people stopped smoking, there would be savings in health care costs, but only in the short term. Eventually, smoking cessation would lead to increased health care costs. And in 2004, MIT published a study, and it says, if we were to base our estimates on smoking costs in any year, and I'm paraphrasing, smoking would add to Medicare outlays, but the mortality effects are powerful and more than offset the higher costs. The implication is that, if anything, Medicare should compensate smokers and tobacco companies, not the reverse. I'm sure you're aware of these, and I've never asked you publicly, and I thought this was a great opportunity. I'm not suggesting that I'm not supportive of this bill, but I'm not suggesting that we encourage smoking. But your comments on those, and is cost really the issue, or is it about quality of life?
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, I think the last part of your comments gets exactly to what the issue is. The reason that preventing people from smoking does increase some health care costs is because people live longer and they live healthier lives. So I suppose the best way to save on health care costs would be to, execute everybody when they hit age 21, and then we won't have to pay for all those pesky health care costs when they get older. Now, obviously, that's not a position I would support, and I would suggest none of you would either. So, that is the trade-off here.
I wasn't suggesting that, by the way, Madam Chair. I hope you wouldn't grant Dr. Cohn a hearing on that.
Another priority bill.
Yes, another priority bill. Representative Cowan.
The older I get, the more I support healthy long life, I might add. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious. In the first paragraph of your testimony, it says federal legislation may preempt the banning of free samples of cigarettes. I just didn't understand that. I'm curious.
Chair Tomei, Representative Cowan, we had several questions about this bill, I believe from this committee and from others, about why it only included non-cigarette tobacco products. And the reason for that is that there's some ambiguity in the federal law, or I should say it's currently being settled in the courts, and we don't yet know where it's going to land, as to whether or not states have the authority to prohibit the free distribution of cigarettes. It's clear that we do have the authority to prohibit the distribution of non-cigarette tobacco products, and that's why this bill is written specifically for that issue.
Any further questions? Representative Kuhn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just an observation of years of going to Sweden and France and Italy. And the farther south in Europe you go, you see more smokers. And you used to be able to go to the northern countries and find it pretty smoke-free until you start realizing that a lot of these women, they didn't want the big wad in their mouth, but they're using the little snooze packet. And it's become very chic in some circles, especially in the business community, and people who travel a lot, because I think you'll even see it on the ads, is you can use snooze on a plane, whereas you can't smoke on a plane. So I think that's not the issue, is using or smoking right now. The issue that we're facing here is prohibiting the free samples where children can get them, to try to stop this before they get the habit. I have friends and family members who have people in their family who did not chew for very long before they contracted mouth cancer and some, I think, esophageal or somewhere in the throat, and said they did not know that this would cause cancer. They thought smoking caused the cancer, and that's why they didn't smoke. So I think that this is a prevention issue that we're considering today, and I'll support it.
Thank you. We'll continue with our next presenter.
Sure. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I'm Raquel Bornanesque with Upstream Public Health, a nonprofit organization dedicating to advancing innovative policies that keep people healthy. And we're also a member of TOSCO, the Tobacco-Free Coalition of Oregon. And I'm here today to support House Bill 2358, which prohibits the sampling of non-cigarette tobacco products. The tobacco industry spends over $130 million on marketing, sampling, and promotion each year just in Oregon. When you do the math, the tobacco industry is outspending the state's tobacco prevention program 15 to 1. 15 to 1, those are bad odds. Why is the tobacco industry spending $130 million in promotion each year? Because advertising and sampling works. Because advertising and sampling works, whether we want to believe it or not, it's especially effective on youth who are still forming opinions about themselves and the image they want to project. No, the industry's promotion of their deadly products is not targeting the middle class. It's not playing out in bingo halls, golf courses, and classic music halls. The industry targets youth at events and places where youth congregate. They go to the hippest bars, the coolest festivals, the most popular rodeos. And worse yet, they send their youngest workers dressed in the trendiest clothes, loaded with free gifts, including samples of addictive tobacco products. It's outrageous, and it needs to stop now. Sampling is an oversimplified term for what is actually occurring. Young people are singled out and approached, given free products, coupons, giveaways, and sometimes their IDs are checked. So in one quick swipe of a driver's license, the industry has collected all the information needed to repeatedly target them by mail and email with even more coupons, gifts, and special offers, which arrive straight to their homes. Sampling is shameful, and it needs to stop now. The industry has been focusing their promotion of non-cigarette tobacco products in rural Oregon, but now sampling is a growing problem in urban Oregon. Portland, for example, has become a hot test market for the industry seeking to hook youngsters with mint smokeless tobacco in Altoid-style tins and tangerine-flavored mini cigars in cartons shaped like cell phones. It's appalling, and it needs to stop now. We all know that youth are more likely to try tobacco and become addicted if it is readily available. Passing this bill will have a positive effect on young Oregonians and will prevent another generation of youth from beginning a deadly addiction. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I strongly urge you to ban the sampling of non-cigarette tobacco products. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of this witness? Representative
Madam Chair, actually I do. I think a week ago, 2 weeks ago, on the floor, we passed a bill unanimously that prohibits the use of driver's license information for marketing or commercial purposes. And I'm wondering, I would assume, of course, I think this bill's going to pass out today, but I would assume that would apply in this situation, too. And is there any, I'm not a lawyer. I wasn't on the other committee, but my assumption is that these two would tie.
Representative Callan, do you want to respond to that?
Well, actually, thank you, Madam Chair. I carried that bill, and I was on the committee. And that wasn't the thrust of the legislation. It was a growing concern that when your driver's license is used for identification purposes or age confirming age restrictions, that sort of thing, that material is stored, and what can it be used for in the future, and that by law, assuming that bill moves all the way through, will only allow the use of that for fraud prevention and that sort of thing, but not marketing of products. So I had a similar question in my mind. I appreciate Representative Maurer bringing it up. I'm not necessarily, I don't know that this particular panel could address that at this point, but it is a new law that I would strongly recommend that you folks monitor and see what the coordination might be between these two.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Madam Chair, I just have, for anybody on the panel, I'm trying to go back and get some clarification on this from Section 2, where it says the person may not distribute free samples of non-cigarette tobacco products in this state. And you're interpreting that coupons apply toward that.
Chair Tomei, Representative Olson, I'm not a lawyer, but this was the information that we were given after consultation with Mr. Cheek.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Margie, did you want to respond to that? Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Good morning. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Randy Harris, and I am here today to support the passage of House Bill 2358 to prohibit the distribution of free samples of non-cigarette tobacco products. I am the Tobacco Prevention and Education Coordinator for Polk County, and as you've heard in other testimony, rural counties such as Polk tend to have a higher smokeless tobacco rate than the rest of the state. Now, we have coordinators in every county, and we are working very hard on the local level to combat this problem. We've been working with fair boards and working with other organizations where sampling is occurring, but it's not enough. In Polk County, our adult smokeless tobacco usage rate is 9%, and that's compared to Oregon's 6%. And our 11th grade male smokeless tobacco rate is higher than the state average as well. So it is very alarming that this is happening not only in Polk County but all over the state. As smoking bans become the norm across the country, tobacco companies are coming up with new ways to keep their users hooked and, more importantly, to recruit new, young customers. Recently, these efforts have led to products called snus, orb, strips, and sticks. All of these are non-cigarette tobacco products, and as you've heard in testimony, they are being heavily marketed in Portland. They're giving out free samples, and they're doing bright, flashy advertisements, as you all saw samples of those. Tobacco companies are not allowed to market to children, but after looking at those and looking at some of the flavors, I have a really hard time believing that this is not the case. Snus comes in flavors such as frost and spice, and if you compare those flavors to some popular gum flavors like Arctic Chill, spicy cinnamon, and sugar mint, it's hard to tell that you're talking about smokeless tobacco products with frost and spice. And unfortunately, due to a lack of free sample bans, kids are trying these products. They're seeing these samples being given out, and they're curious, and they're trying them, and they're getting addicted. By allowing tobacco companies to distribute samples of non-cigarette tobacco products throughout our communities, we are essentially promoting addiction, disease, and death. We are also making it easy for our youth to get these free products and giving the tobacco companies their next customers. In this first informational hearing, a young woman came before you, and she testified that there was a sampling in her county of Jefferson County, and she held up the three cans of snus. Chewing tobacco. And this girl was 13 years old, and she was able to get three full cans of chewing tobacco. So it's happening in Jefferson County, it's happening in Polk County, and it's happening all over the state that these youth are getting the smokeless tobacco through these samplings. And unfortunately, with three cans of snus or three cans of chewing tobacco, that's how these kids are getting addicted. So without this legislation, free samples of non-cigarette tobacco products will continue to be available in Oregon, and this is only going to increase the number of youth that are becoming addicted. So please support House Bill 2358, and I thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions, please, this witness? I just want to ask, from what I've heard, even if somebody's ID has been given out and they're 18 years or older, that can certainly be distributed to younger people. And that's what I've been hearing, that either the boyfriend or older brother or sister, they get these, and that the younger people have access to them.
That's exactly what's happening, is that the sampling, the people who are doing the sampling are properly checking IDs, we hope, but it's filtering down, just like you said, to boyfriends, girlfriends, sisters, cousins, nieces, and nephews. So it's happening. Or even kids who are doing shoulder tapping, you know, hey, can you go get me a sample? Mm-hmm. And also, you know, we don't know if the ID is being checked correctly. We've done some Polk County tobacco retailer compliance checks, and we are not in compliance. I know Marion County has done those too, so that's a whole other issue, but essentially we're assuming that it's getting passed down.
Right, and I remember that happening in Clackamas County too, going into especially to the convenience stores, that it was that they very seldom checked IDs or checked them correctly.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome.
I think Representative Chair Huffman had a question.
Representative Huffman, the other Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For life.
I'm conflicted.
you have a question, number one?
It kind of goes back to the vending machine question from an earlier bill. I'll ask you to the same question I asked Dr. Cohn. Do you know of studies that say that kids are getting addicted because of the free samples?
Chair Tomei, Representative Huffman, no, I have not seen any studies. However, with a 13-year-old Jefferson County girl who came in and had the three cans, we can safely assume, because we know nicotine is such an addictive product, and studies after studies have shown that snus and smokeless tobacco has a higher nicotine, has more nicotine in it than cigarettes. So if they were to use the three cans, that, yes, they would become addicted.
And the advertising, obviously, is directed at young people. It's not directed at anybody our age here. Sorry, colleagues. We're not likely to start chewing or using any kind of tobacco products, but it would be the young people who might see that as sort of a jazzy or sexy kind of event.
Madam Chair, follow-up, though, we're not addressing the advertising. I guess, again, I just feel like maybe we're addressing the wrong issue. And on the point of the Jefferson County girl, my constituent, I could be wrong, but I think her testimony was that a boy in her school had actually acquired those three cans from somebody. I don't think he specifically went in the trailer at Ahern's Market parking lot and got those three. But
that's what we're saying, that they're accessible maybe to the older persons,
right.
But they'll filter down to the younger
ones.
That's
against the law, Madam Chair.
I'm sure you're going to be out there getting those folks, disobeying the law. Representative Van Orman.
Madam Chair, in response to Representative Olson's question, I think, and we can all sort of mull this over, but on line 9 and 10, it talks about entering the market to expand the market with such distributions or related unfair or anti-competitive practices. So I'm presuming coupons fall into anti-competitive practices. So I think that must be the line that gives you the.
Representative, did you want to respond to that?
Chair Tomei, Representative Van Orman, I certainly yield to the legal expertise of this panel,
far more
than mine. So it may well be that was the line and not the specific one that Representative Olson referenced that. That was the basis for the legal opinion that we got.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Representative Mallon.
Thanks, Madam Chair. There are a number of companies already prohibited from free sampling in the state under the master settlement agreement. No? That was only... no, that's fine. Okay, I was under the assumption that there were, under the master settlement agreements, there were prohibitions for companies that signed that master settlement agreement. I've been told wrong, because I'm pretty clear that that's what...
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, the practices that we've talked about here and that would be prohibited by this bill are not prohibited under the MSA. That's why we need the bill.
Any further questions? Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And from a previous testimony or my notes, the state of Washington bans sampling. Is that correct?
Representative Tomei, Representative Cowan, yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Just a comment, if I could, in follow-up, because there have been others. And we've been talking about whether or not it's prohibited to provide samples to people who are of age, which is not against the law, and the fact that these could then be shared. I think the point that I see in this bill, and I appreciate your comments on it, is that if something is given out as a free sample, it's pretty easy to pick it up and pass it along to somebody else, because there's no out-of-pocket cost for that, whereas asking an older individual to go and purchase something on your behalf is a little bit different process. Is that the reasoning that went into the ban on sampling, or part of it?
Chair Tomei, Representative Cowan, I would agree with that. I think that's a lot of the behavior that's going on that's of concern.
Any further questions of this panel? Thank you very much. Do we have anybody else? Nobody else has signed up. Does anyone else who wishes to speak on this bill? Seeing nobody raise their hands, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2358 and open up a work session on House Bill 2358. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2358 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2358 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Van Orman.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
No.
Representative Freeman.
No.
Representative Denbrough.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. Having received the required majority, House Bill 2358 passes and will be carried to the floor, sent to the floor for the due pass recommendation. I will carry the bill. Thank you so much. Okay, we'll move on to a work session on House Bill 2137. Keeley. Thank you all who came.
House Bill 2137 provides immunity from civil liability for individuals and entities when they disclose protected information in good faith and with reasonable grounds in connection with a protective proceeding. It allows DHS to petition for a protective order and allows the department, the proposed public guardian or conservator, to disclose protected information if necessary for health and safety purposes. There is a recommended amendment. It is the -3 amendment that limits the information that may be disclosed, puts limits on the extent of the civil immunity, and increases the disclosure requirements to the need to prevent or lessen a serious and imminent threat to health and safety. It also requires that confidential information disclosed to the court remain confidential and sealed by the court. And I believe that DHS wanted to briefly address these amendments.
DHS?
Madam Chair, do we have the -3s available anywhere? Or?
You should.
They were on our desk this morning, I think. Wait, that one got missed, apparently. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. I'm Marie Cervantes. I'm the manager for the Adult Protective Services Program for the Office of Licensing and Quality of Care for Seniors and People with Disabilities in the Department of Human Services. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. This bill was introduced by the governor on behalf of DHS to expand the tool and the interventions that are available to adult protective service workers to protect vulnerable adults. Bob Junedef and members of the Elder Law section of the bar have been working with us to craft language that is acceptable to all parties. So in order to meet the legislative timelines, we are comfortable with having the bill pass with the -3 amendments. And we do want to note for the record that there are three outstanding issues that DHS is committed to resolving. Those issues are, first, the language in the -3 amendment that allows for the release of protected information is broader than intended. The intent was to release information that was only minimally necessary. Second, the good faith requirement that applies to Section 2, Subsection 2, should also apply to Subsection 1. And third, the language needs to be clarified regarding when a fiduciary who is the subject of the petition or protective order may cause that protected information to be released after the court record has been sealed. So we have, DHS has agreed to resolve these issues. We have already set up a meeting to discuss those, and I thank you for your attention to this bill, and we would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I'm somewhat confused. So you're saying these are still outstanding issues that need to be addressed that have not been addressed in the amendment. Is that correct?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, that is correct. We have been working with Bob Junedef to do that and have already set up a meeting.
Mr. Junedef here? I don't see him.
He was here.
So is your assumption that this will be corrected? Do you want to testify? That this will be corrected on the when it gets to the Senate side?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Karen Mainzer with Seniors and People with Disabilities. Yes, we have agreement with Mr. Joondep and with the members of the elder law part of the bar that we've been working with that we will correct it on the Senate side in order to meet legislative timelines.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I did receive an email from Mr. Joondep to that effect, that he had reached agreement with DHS and they were content to reach those corrections on the Senate side because we're nearing the end of our timeline.
Right. Okay, thank you. go ahead. Any questions of this young lady? Yes, Representative.
Okay, I've got more of a procedural question being new. Is it common that we pass things through knowing they're not correct?
Not terribly, but if the people who have the problems agree that they want to see this passed and will be dealt with in the Senate side, where they will certainly have a lot more time than we have here, then it's not common, but it is done.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And, Madam Chair, the fact that we have it in writing, I didn't see the email. I'm assuming that Keeley's truthful. Or they come testify.
Appreciate that. we can stand at ease for a couple of minutes if you'd like to see Mr. Joondep.
No. But just to, I mean, that's been my experience. It doesn't happen often. But
right. Just knew, I just was asking. Thank you.
Sure, you bet. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
I apologize. I should introduce myself at the beginning. My name is Fred Steele. I'm a senior policy analyst with Seniors and People with Disabilities Division within Department of Human Services. I came up here with Marie just to assist in any technical questions. I'd been working with Bob Joondep and members of the Elder Law Section, as well as our Assistant Attorney General, in drafting the language that went into the Dash 3. And to give you a little background and to help you with your decision-making process here, we had come to an agreement on language with Bob Joondep, or Mr. Joondep, and members of the Elder Law Section of the State Bar. And in finalizing the draft before we sent it to Ledge Council with our Assistant Attorney General, we made a few tweaks that we thought were just clarifying some issues, and it resulted in a couple points of problematic language. But given the timelines, we were hoping that we'd have the opportunity to fix that on the Senate side.
Great. So. Mr. Joondep, would you come and talk to us?
Yeah. Is what they all just said correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Joondep from Disability Rights Oregon. And I haven't had the opportunity to hear the testimony that went before. However, I do know that we have worked together to try to fashion some changes for this bill. I think we're really pretty much on the same page. We just haven't gotten it down in writing.
Okay.
So we need to have more time to work on it. And I think we've agreed to continue working on it over on the other side of the legislative process.
That's just what we wanted to hear. Any questions of Mr. Joondep or anyone else? Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
With that, I will close the public hearing.
We're not in a public hearing. We're in a work session. So don't close.
Okay.
we just had a work. All we had on the agenda was a work session. So we're in a work session.
Thank you. You're right. I'm looking at the wrong bill.
It's okay.
I've got two dozen bills listed here. Okay. Representative.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2137, dated April 9th, 2009.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2137, dated April 9th, 2009. Any discussion? Okay. Any objection? So they are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2137.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but there I have a Dash 2 in my...
You don't have the 3?
No, I have the 3 also.
We're not doing anything with the 2s.
Thank you. Okay.
That was the question.
Thank you.
Did I say 2? I didn't, did I?
No, you did not. Okay. I just didn't want to miss something.
Right. Okay, Representative Olson.
So do you want me to continue where I left off or
yeah, that
start
would be
all
great.
Over?
Whatever.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2137 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2137 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none. Zach, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Allen.
Aye.
Representative Dimbro.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Excuse.
Representative Mauer.
Aye.
Representative Van Orme.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. Having received the majority of votes required for passages, House Bill 2137 is passed. Would anyone like to offer to carry this on the floor? Who hasn't carried a bill for a while?
Freeman.
I'd rather carry one that I know about that's going to be right, if I could.
That makes sense. Let's see. Carried a bill lately, Representative
Mauer? You've signed him one for today.
Did I?
Yeah, he got one today.
All right, Representative Olson will carry. Thank you very much. All right.
I'm still working through the other part.
We will now open up a work session on House Bill 2868.
House Bill 2868 requires the Department of Human Services to provide on a quarterly basis and at minimal cost orientation for child care providers who are not registered or certified but who receive funds from DHS for child care services. The -1 amendment, which is recommended, makes the requirement applicable only to new child care providers and providers approved to receive funds from the Department of Human Services.
Okay, I can't find my bill.
2868.
Can I borrow yours?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. So do we have anybody who's...
Representative Van Orme, this is her bill.
All right, Representative.
This is simply a bill to make sure that people who are receiving payment from the Department for Child Care, and they may not be licensed or certified, that they receive an orientation.
Great. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a question of Representative Van Orme is that... if you could explain a little bit the kinds of monies they get and then why they are not licensed or certified.
They're essentially kith and kin providers.
Sorry. Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Well, that was easy.
Any further questions? I see Mr. Todd here. Do you wish to come up and speak?
Yeah, it's your turn.
Anybody from, is Megan here? Oh, did you want to speak on this?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Vic Todd, administrator for the self-sufficiency programs within the Children's, Adults, and Families Division of the Department of Human Services. I'll be very brief. Just wanted to comment that we support what this bill proposes. Currently, orientation training is voluntary, and what we have experienced is a low attendance, and so we feel this would help with encouraging providers to attend, and we believe that within the current capacity we have that we can absorb that, so there would be no fiscal impact. So with that, I'll stop because I know
Thank
you're
you,
running
Meg.
Short.
Great. Any questions of Mr. Todd? Okay, Megan.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Moyer. I'm with the Service Employee International Union. I'd like to start by thanking Representative Van Orman and Vic Todd and Rhonda from the department for their hard work on this bill. And it is much appreciated. I think that this bill will hopefully result in a greater understanding by providers of the program, how to bill in the program, and the resources and additional trainings that are available to providers to enhance the quality of care to Oregon's children.
Okay, thank you, Megan. Any questions of this witness? Seeing none, thank you both very much. Does anyone else wish to speak on this bill? If not, I will...
Ready for them.
Well, why don't we let Representative Van Orme do this?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2868 of April 9th, 2009.
Representative Van Orme moves to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2868 dated April 9th, 2009. Any discussion? All right. Any objections? The amendment is adopted. Representative Van Orme.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House Bill 2868, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Van Orman moves House Bill 2868 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Van Orman.
Aye.
Representative Bauer.
Aye.
Representative
Huffman excused.
Excused.
Here he is.
Representative Huffman, how do you vote?
Oh, yes, aye. Madam Chair.
Good.
Aye. Yes.
Good.
Did you trick me, Madam Chair?
Yes, I did. Hey,
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Denbrough.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Having received the required majority, House Bill 2868, as amended, passes and will be carried on the floor by Representative Van Orman.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll be happy
Thank
to
you.
Do that.
Good job. Okay, we have, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2989, and we are going to be referring this bill to rules. So then I'll have to take a vote.
Yes, ma'am. There's...
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2989 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 2989 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Any discussion? Okay, Zach, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Representative Denbrough.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Malik.
Aye.
Representative Van Orman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Clement.
Aye. Having received the required majority, House Bill 2989 will go to the Committee on Rules without recommendation. Did you have something else?
Well, we have one more bill which we had discussed, and I don't know if you want to. We need to either carry it over or we will have to suspend rules if you want to vote on it, and that's 3273, which is Ms. Hebb's bill that we heard about domestic violence.
Absolutely.
Cleaned out
Thank
the
you.
Room. So.
Yes, we will open up a work session on House Bill 3273. No. It's on the back of your agenda.
And this bill requires that, the initial bill requires Department of Human Services to contract with local providers of victim services for the location of staff members at DHS offices to foster a closer working relationship between child welfare and victim service providers. The -1 amendment, which is recommended, makes language permissive rather than declarative. And Representative Olson, somewhere in those earlier motions, there's also a motion to suspend rules for this bill. It should be in 3353, your folder for 3353.
What are we talking about?
We need to suspend the rules. And I didn't have an actual script on another bill, so it's on the back of this script. So his script for 3353 should have the motion to suspend rules for this bill.
For 3273.
That is correct.
Wow.
I'm confused.
I'm sorry.
Followed that perfectly.
So if we pass, this will we would adopt the -1 and move this to Ways and Means.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3273 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review.
Representative Olson moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3273 without the fiscal impact statement being available upon review. Okay. Anyone of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3273 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review will say aye, and those opposed, no. Anyone opposed? Can I just say that? Anyone opposed to that? Seeing none, the motion carries and the rules have been suspended. Okay. And so
now we vote for the bill.
Well,
the amendment.
Ah, right.
the amendment. Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3273, dated April 14th, 2009.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3273, dated April 14th, 2009. Any discussion? All right, seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3273 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 3273 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. But it goes to
with
Ways
a subsequent,
oh.
And we add a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
With a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Who is this from?
Sybil.
She says it will have no fiscal impact, and that was the intent of the dash one amendments. We can choose to do this without a subsequent referral, and then if a subsequent referral comes in, my understanding is the Speaker's office sends it automatically to Ways and Means.
Okay. And so that would work for me. That works for everybody because, yeah. Okay, so it does not go to Ways and Means. So can you change your motion, please? Your motion was fine. I think
I was fine. You just mentioned right. With okay. The subsequent referral. So.
Okay. So could you give your motion again so that
okay,
it's clear?
Representative. Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3273 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 3273 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, the clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Van Orden.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
No.
Representative Dimbro.
Aye.
Representative Callen.
Excused.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye.
There's Representative Callen.
Having required the majority of votes required for passage, House Bill 3273 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And I will carry that. So thank you all very much. I close the work session on House Bill 3273. Anything for the good of the order? I'm letting you out 12 minutes early. Thank you all for being on time. And I would ask that if you leave the room again, please, if you'd let me know. And let me know, I mean, if you're going to the restroom, you're not going to.
I did, Madam Chair.
But, sometimes it's difficult for me to say, excuse.
You're gone.
You asked for that, Madam Chair.
I did indeed. One or two is good. It's great. But it would be helpful for me to know. Thank you very much. And I'll close the committee on human services.